this concept. So it's been a little bit of a struggle getting it before the public. And next week, we're going to talk about the main explorers who went to the site, what they found and what they were able to see about Noah's Ark. And last week, we talked about what you could see from the air and the fact that you can actually see it on Google Earth and go look at the site from ground level. There's a number of photographs taken and put at that particular point in Google Earth. If you go to that area, go to the far eastern edge of Turkey where it joins to Iran, due south of Mount Ararat, and you'll find it there. So, the major reason why some scholars reject this site is it's too big. They read in the Bible, it's supposed to be 450 feet long. We talked about that at the end of class last time. And talked about the fact that Moses didn't really know about feet and yards, did he? He was talking about what? Cubits. And so this in the NIV, it says that the ark is to be 450 feet long, 75 feet wide, and 45 feet high, assumes a cubit which runs from your elbow to the tip of your middle finger of 18 inches. Now that may have varied from time to time, depending on how big people were, you would think. And it's something of a surprise that a standard cubit was known for thousands of years, up until the time of David, when they adopted the 18-inch cubit, which is the one that's assumed here. So they say, it's too big. We don't know what it is, but it can't be Noah's Ark. It's too big. Well, we have to take care of that criticism early on, and then we'll look at the rest of it in the coming weeks. We're going to come back to this idea of the structure of it in a couple of weeks and see if we can figure out how the thing was made, how it was assembled. It was the largest ship ever built until about 100 years ago. So it's an amazing structure, and it was made out of wood. I mentioned that business in verse 14 up here about making it out of cypress wood. That's a guess, too, as to what kind of wood. We have no idea what kind of wood it was. And I looked this up for myself in Strong's analytical concordance, where he has all of these Hebrew words analyzed and definitions of them and so on. And you remember how it came out in the King James Version? What kind of wood was it? Gopher wood. And there's a very interesting word that they have no idea what it means that comes out, gopher, G-F-R. They have only the consonants in the Hebrew. They don't have any vowels. So G-F-O, gopher, and that's how it was translated, and they figure that's some kind of wood. But there's another word, kopher, C-F-R. And it sounds, when you say kopher and gopher, it's kind of hard to tell them apart, isn't it? And it means waterproofed, covered with asphalt. Kopher is the word for bitumen or asphalt. And so there's a problem there in that if you look at this letter, I should have put it on the screen, but I didn't. But the C and the G, the C is a, or the K actually, it's a K. It looks like a backwards letter C. That's why I get it confused in my mind. And the G is a backward-looking C, too, that one is just longer. The arms are longer than the other, and we think a scribe somewhere in copying mistook those two letters. And so gopher wood came out gopher wood, but it really means a waterproofed lumber of some sort. All right, and we'll talk about all of that in coming weeks. So, we went to the site on Google Earth and took a measurement. This was at the end of the class last time. It's 515 feet long, and you can see that easily. The sort of white stuff in the lower right-hand corner is a cloud that happened to be nearby when they took the picture, but fortunately it wasn't over the site we're interested in. And the yellow pin, I thought it was kind of interesting. There's an ad on TV where these pins drop out of the air and fall on cars. And have you seen that one? And one of them has fallen right here by Noah's Ark. No, when you choose that as a bookmark, it puts a pin, a yellow pin there, so that you can go back to it rather easily when you come back. So that's what that yellow pin is. 515 feet, not 450. So we have to pursue that. And we know that in the scriptures, we've already talked about it, it's 300 cubits, 50 cubits, and 30 cubits are the actual values that are put there in Genesis where it describes the ark. And there's a 1-cubit measure, which is a window from the gunnels of the ship up to the roof, I think. We'll talk about that when we talk about the structure. And that window runs all the way around the ark, or at least most of the way around the ark, so that he had access to the sea around the ship, and also we'll see later on from inside the ship. It has 3 decks, and so that's another thing we'll talk about. And when we're talking about the size of it, a ship with 3 decks is a pretty good sized ship. And of course, if it's 30 cubits high, even if it's 45 feet, how tall is this building? A couple of stories, maybe 25 feet or something like that. We're talking about something much taller than the building you're sitting in now. Okay, you'll understand that when we get through today. Now, if it's 300 cubits long and the ship is actually 515 feet, we can make a preliminary calculation here. How long is a cubit? 1 cubit is 1.717 feet, or 1 cubit is 20.6 inches, not 18 inches. You see, a couple of inches makes a big difference when you have 300 of them. Okay? So if the standard cubit of biblical times was 18 inches, you see, was there an earlier cubit that was longer? That's the question that we're faced with here. So let's see what we're going to look at this from two standpoints. We're going to take a look at the scripture to see if we've missed anything there, and then we're going to look at some archaeology in a minute. Incidentally, every time I say archaeology, that's a joke. Okay, we're talking about archaeology. Okay, okay. Yeah, you can groan every time we get to that word. Okay. In 2 Chronicles chapter 3, verse 3. It talks about Solomon laying the foundation for building the temple. And you wonder, well, what's this got to do with it? Well, it's one of the references in the Bible where they talk about cubits. The foundation Solomon laid for the building was 60 cubits long and 20 cubits wide. And you kind of remember that. It's going to come up again in a minute. Using the cubit of the old standard. What was the cubit of the old standard? So you see, there was a different cubit in the time when Solomon built the temple from the one that they were already using in his time and from then on down through biblical times. All right? So there's an old standard cubit. Incidentally, how do we know the standard length of a foot or a yard or a meter? Is there one, or can you just make up a ruler on your own and use any one you want? Well, you can do that, but it won't fit the standards, will it? There is in Washington, D.C., what? A National Bureau of Standards. And they keep track of how long a yard is, how long a foot is, how long a meter is, and they have to go to Paris to get the reference for the meter. But they're changing all of that now and relating it to atomic distances. And so they talk about atoms when they're talking about the lengths of things anymore. But there has been, since our nation was founded, a National Bureau of Standards. kept track of weights and measures and volumes and that sort of thing. So if you really wanted to know if you had a gallon of gasoline, you see, that's come up recently, hasn't it? You pump out a gallon of gasoline. Was it really a gallon? Well, the state has a way of testing that to make sure you're getting your money's worth. So there was a standard, and it was the old standard, not the new standard, okay? Now, we're going to look at this because we have some information about how long a cubit was in the case of the temple. And so you'll see that as we go along. When Ezekiel was given the plans to reconstruct the temple, why are they going to have to reconstruct it? Well, when the Babylonians took Jerusalem, they destroyed everything. And so the refugees coming back home had to rebuild the temple. They were given permission to do so. They came back to Jerusalem and rebuilt it, but they didn't have any plans. Originally, the plans were devised by David, inspired by God, and given to Solomon. As you look at the end of 2 Samuel and look over at the first part of 1 Samuel, look over at the second Chronicles, the start of 2 Chronicles, you'll find this whole business discussed. And so they had to have the plans given again, and there's an angel giving him a tour and a vision. And in Ezekiel 40, where the temple is described, I saw a wall completely surrounding the temple area. The length of the measuring rod in the man's hand was 6 long cubits. What's a long cubit? Well, it tells you what it is, isn't it? Each of which was a cubit and a hand breadth. So that gives us some idea of how much we're going to add to the 18-inch cubit. We're going to put the distance across your fingers, which is what a hand breadth is, which is between 2 and 3 inches, added to the 18-inch cubit. So there is some biblical reference to an older cubit which was longer than the one that they were using in Bible times. He measured the wall. It was one measuring rod thick and one rod high. And the rod is 6 cubits, and if the cubit is 18 inches plus the hand breadth, somewhere between 20 and 21 inches, then you see we're talking about a wall which is 10 feet thick. That gives you some idea of how those numbers relate. All right, long cubits. Incidentally, the distance, I'm almost 6 feet tall. I'm a quarter inch short. And the distance from my elbow to the tip of my fingers is 18 and 3/4 inches. So it varies, of course, from person to person. And you might imagine that in the ancient times, the cubit was a little longer because people were a little bit bigger. It's possible. We don't have a lot of skeletons to compare that sort of thing. And certainly not from the time before the flood, because that was all washed away and destroyed, wasn't it? Those people, they didn't make mummies and they didn't make except in caves. Okay, the flood had trouble disrupting all of the skeletons that weren't in caves. And so that comes up later on. We'll talk about that. That's why the ancient skeletons that they uncover are called cavemen. Well, that's true. That's where all of that stuff is found. So was the cubit of the old standard used in, why was it used in temple construction? That seems to have been the cubit used in constructing the tabernacle, and the temple was a replacement for the tabernacle. That whole story is very interesting. It's deserving of 2 or 3 lessons, and we don't have time for it this morning. But David had a real political problem with the priests when he was thinking about making an enduring temple instead of the tent, which was dismantled from time to time. And so, but that's described over in Exodus, isn't it? The tabernacle. And who wrote the account of Noah? Now we're talking about the first 5 books of the Bible. So who wrote it? Moses. Who wrote the account of the tabernacle construction? Moses. And who described the Ark of the Covenant? And we're going to get to the Ark of the Covenant. It turns out that's where we're going to find out how long the cubit is. We haven't found the Ark of the Covenant, contrary to Indiana Jones's escapades, but we do know something about its dimensions, and that's a real surprise from modern archaeology. The Ark of the Covenant gives us the length of the cubit of the Old Standard. Moses described all three. Where did Moses learn how long a cubit was? Where did he get his education? Egypt, right. And guess what? Egypt had a long cubit when he was growing up. They had something called a royal cubit. It turns out to be the same length as the one we're shooting for here, a little over 20 inches. All right, but we've got to... You can do all of this, and you can show it to somebody who doesn't want to believe, and they're going to think of all sorts of reasons why this may not be true. So, let's get some solid evidence here. Let me give you a brief history of the Temple Mount. Where is the Temple Mount? Temple is where they built the temple, where Solomon built his temple, where it was replaced in the time of the returning refugees from the Babylonian captivity. They built a temple in the same footprint of the original temple. And then that one lasted for quite a while, and then it was torn down in the period just preceding the time of the Messiah because Herod the Great decided to make peace with the Jews he was trying to rule, and he decided he would build them a really glorious temple. And so they tore down the wooden one that had been built in the meantime, and he built one to rival what Solomon had built. But they made him build it on the same footprint where the original had stood. By a footprint, what do you mean? On the same foundation plan, right? And so it's the same size, and we read back there what the size was. It was 20 cubits wide, 60 cubits long. That's the main hall of the temple. And it consists of two parts. Remember that from your studies? The big part where you go in first, the part that faces east, is called the holy place. Who could go in there? The priest could go in there, couldn't they? And then at the back of it was the most holy place. The term inner sanctum comes from that kind of a term. And who could go there? The high priest once a year. And in that room, which was a 10-cubit cube in the case of the tabernacle, it's expanded to a room that's 20 cubits by 20 cubits inside measure. And sitting in the middle of that room is the Ark of the Covenant. Now, that Ark was made in the time of Moses. God speaking to Moses in Exodus 25, have them make a chest of acacia wood. Acacia was one of the prominent trees in the area where they were working here. 2.5 cubits long and 1.5 cubits wide and 1.5 cubits high. That box, this long, this wide, and that high, you saw it in the movie, okay? Probably decorated somewhat elaborately, but really just a box contained, and the term ark means something constructed to contain something, right? That's the way they use that term. And so what did it contain? Why is it called the Ark of the Covenant? Because it contains the Ten Commandments written on stone tablets, two tablets. The Ten Commandments, the covenant, thou shalt not or thou shalt do these things. And the Israelites were constrained to do the things that were written on the stone, and in return, what was God's promise? He would bless them, yes. He would be their God. He would provide their needs. He demonstrated that over and over again in the books of Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. So, that's the covenant on those stones. And they were put in this box, and they were still there, it says, when we get to the time of Solomon. And they transfer the ark from Well, it wasn't in the tabernacle itself. That's a story of its own. It had been put in storage in Abinadab's house. And so they went to get it, to bring it. David wanted to bring it to Jerusalem, but he couldn't get the priest to cooperate with him very well. And so it should have gone in the tabernacle. And the tabernacle was set up at Gibeon. But they didn't do that, and there must be reasons why, and you can read about that, and we'll talk about it someday. But he brought it to Jerusalem and put it in his own tent. He set up a tent for it, probably something, a replica of the tabernacle, and they were going to go get this, and they started to bring it in on a cart, and what happened? Somebody had an accident. What was his name? Uzzah. And he touched the ark and he died. And so they set the ark back in the care of someone nearby and left it there for a while David and his advisors studied the situation, and they decided we're not supposed to put it on a cart. That's the way the Philistines did it. What are we supposed to do with it? You're supposed to carry it with poles that go through rings in the side of the ark. And that's important. We'll see that in a minute. And so normally those poles were maybe 10 cubits long. But they got some poles this time. Did you ever hear the expression, "I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole"? They got a long ways away from that box. They put poles through it that were over 20 cubits long. In fact, I'm surprised that the poles didn't break when they lifted it on the ends and they got way back away from it. But they carried it in a procession and got it into Jerusalem. Now, when Solomon built his temple, then they took the Ark of the Covenant out of the tent that David had made and put it in the most holy place in the temple, where obviously it should be put. Okay. So here's this box. It survived down to the time of Solomon, but about 450 years later, when the Babylonians captured Jerusalem, the ark disappears. And it's never been seen since then. We don't know what happened to it, and there, every now and then on the Discovery Channel, you'll see a program rerun about where they're looking for it and where they think it might have been hidden, and it's probably in a cave somewhere under Jerusalem or in the Dead Sea region, or who knows where. But Jeremiah said there'll come a time when no one will even think about the ark. It'll not be mentioned. It'll not be worried about. It's gone. And maybe the Babylonians destroyed it. We really don't know. But its shadow remains, and that's in a way. It's not a real shadow, but it is one like it. Now, the tabernacle was at Gibeon, but the temple was built in Jerusalem. It was built on the top of a mountain, and that mountain is Mount Moriah. And it's thought by the Jews to be the spot where Abraham took Isaac to offer him as a sacrifice. Remember that story? But the Muslims think that it wasn't Isaac who was offered, it was Ishmael instead. And so they elevate Ishmael, the Jews elevate Isaac, and this spot is on the top of this mountain, just north, just west of where David had built the city of David. Jerusalem hadn't expanded to this point at the time that the temple was built. Well, it was to be built on the threshing floor of Araunah. Araunah was a Jebusite who was in the process of threshing his grain when the angel of the Lord threatened to destroy Jerusalem because of something that David had done, and there was a plague hanging over them. And David repented of what he had done, I guess we could put it that way, and God told him to make a sacrifice, to build an altar and make a sacrifice. And David went to Araunah and bought his threshing floor on the very top of the mountain. The way a threshing floor works, of course, is they had a team of oxen dragging a heavy sledge in a circle, and they would throw the grain down in there, and they would grind out the wheat from the chaff, and then they'd pick this up and winnow it, throw it in the air, and the wind would blow the chaff away, the chaff and the wheat and the stems. So it was good to place that on the very top of a hill because that's where you have the most wind, okay? And so that's what they were doing when this happened. And David bought the oxen and the site from Araunah, I guess is how you pronounce it, and built an altar there and offered, and the plague was stayed. And that story is in the last chapter of 1 Chronicles. So when David got in his mind to build a temple, God told him he couldn't do it, but his son would do it, Solomon. And so David decided to build it on this rock on the top of this mountain. That rock is under this building. And what building is that? It's a very recognizable building. What's it called? The Dome of the Rock. Did you ever wonder what rock was there? That's the rock they're talking about. It's holy to the Muslim religion and also to the Jews. And of course, there's this big conflict as to who owns this part of Jerusalem, and it's a political problem even today. Now, if you look at that building, here's a cutaway diagram. You can see it's made as a big octagon, and another octagon with pillars inside and a roof over that, and then a cylinder in the center underneath the dome, and the rock we're interested in is at the base of that cylinder. Visitors can go in and see it. It became even more sacred to the religion of the Arabs because it's thought to be the place from which Muhammad ascended to heaven. Okay? And of course, the Jews think it's special because that's where the temple was constructed. Now, a man named Lean Ritmeyer wrote an article in Biblical Archaeology Review. I have the issue. I take the magazine. And this one is January, February of 1996. And he has a big article in here of his studies of this temple mount. At the time, there were big arguments about where did Solomon build this temple, where did Herod build his temple. They've come to the conclusion they were all built on this site. And especially since Lean Ritmeyer did his studies. He's an archaeology student studying in London, and he finished his PhD and did this as a postdoctoral study. He was interested He's an architecture student, and he was interested in the architecture of the temple. So he came to Jerusalem and arranged to get in this gallery that goes around underneath the dome at the top. You can kind of see there's a place to walk around there, and you can look down on the rock from up there. It isn't open to the public, but he got permission to go up there with a camera and take a picture of the rock from up above. And he published that in this article, and since then has written a book, which is currently available. I think you can order the book now. I haven't gotten it yet, but I will. So he took a picture of the rock down below. And you can see the rotunda, underneath the rotunda there, is this rock. It's somewhat rough. It has been through a lot. The Crusaders around 1000 A.D. began chipping pieces of it and selling it back home for an equal weight of gold. The price was pretty good, I think, for a chunk of rock. And so they would take a little rectangle of rock that they mined from this thing and or quarried from it and take it back home and sell it to finance their crusades. Well, it's got a number of interesting parts to it. Let me point out a few things about it here. it goes to a scarf at the back. It's been chopped off almost straight across there. And also on the right side, the picture doesn't go over that far. It's got some marks in it, and it actually has an opening right here into a cave down below. And this looks like an irregularity, but I think it's mostly just a discoloration here. And he noted that there are some markings here that suggested that there had been a trench leveled out on the surface of the rock to put a wall. And there was another interesting thing, a little rectangle back here. And there was a sort of a pit dug there, which happens to be in the center of the dome. And they thought that probably the Arabs dug that to mount a pole there when they were building the Dome of the Rock in 691 A.D. So he put all of that information. He had a picture of it. He had taken care to properly understand the dimensions and everything to so that he could do the measurement photographically. And here was his diagram of what was there, the Rittmeyer diagram. And you can see where it looks like there were level spots in the rock so that you could put stone blocks there and they would rest solidly on the foundation rock. This is the top view. We're looking down on it, just like the picture. And here are the posts that that support the rotunda. Over here is where the Crusaders were quarrying, and here's where the center of the rock was. Now the rock goes off into the dirt back here, but it's buried about a foot below the soil now. And you can see that there's a kind of a right angle here. And he got to looking at that and he said, well, we could put a wall here and a wall outside the rock there, and a wall outside this scarp on the north side. And so this could be in the holy place of the temple. Okay. Yeah, there we go. He turned his diagram upside down here. And you have to look to see where north is. Here's north going this way now. So this is the reverse of the one he was looking at. And so he said, okay, we'll put a wall here that is 6 cubits wide, about 10 feet, and it fits, you see, across the way the rock is quarried, and you can see where they had these stones that went in this wall. This wall has to go across the rock because the rock is bigger than 20 cubits. So one of the walls has to go across, but the other, the back wall, this would be the west wall, and this would be the north wall of the thing, originally on the rock before the building was put there. This is where he laid the foundation. And then he noticed this little rectangle. That little rectangle would, if this is the Holy of Holies, that little rectangle would sit right in the smack dab center of the most holy place. But it's organized a little peculiarly. You see, it goes endways in there instead of crossways. Indiana Jones had it wrong, and that they always set it up a crossway. And the other thing was that there's no table specified in Exodus to set this thing on. It always sits on the ground. Wonder why. And so there's no table in the temple either. The thing sat directly on the rock. Now that leads to a problem, because this place is prone to earthquakes. And if you set a fairly heavy box down on a smooth rock, or fairly smooth rock, in which it can kind of wiggle around, and then you have a bad earthquake, what happens to it? Well, it skitters across the rock and might bang into the walls and be damaged. So they didn't do that. The idea is they dug a shallow pit, rectangular pit, just a couple inches deep. And the idea is they set the Ark of the Covenant in that rectangle. Could that be what that rectangle is? Well, you can test it several different ways. What is the ratio of the length to the width of the Ark of the Covenant? Okay? It's 2.5 cubits to 1.5 cubits. That ratio is 5 to 3, or 10 to 6. And it turns out to be 1.666666. You remember how those repeating ratios worked in math. 1.67 should be the ratio of the length to the width. And it turns out that it is. Okay? Now, I made a simpler diagram here. I turned it facing east the way we normally draw maps. North is to the top. And here's how the rock, which is called in Arabic Es-Sakra. That means the rock. Surprise, surprise. And so the place for the ark would be in the dead center of the most holy place. This would be the curtain that separates the holy place from the most holy place. And this is the 10-foot wall, the thick wall that goes around. And the distance across from here to there would be 20 cubits. Okay? Turns out that it is. And so all of the arguments have subsided about whether or not this is where the temple was built. Almost everybody agrees now that it is. But we're interested in that little rectangle because that tells us how big the Ark of the Covenant was, doesn't it? Okay. The Ark of the Covenant was 1.5 cubits wide, 2.5 cubits long. The length to width ratio is 1.67. The rectangular depression is 31 inches wide and 52 inches long. The length to width ratio is 1.68. That's within 1%. So that's a pretty good fit. If 31 inches is 1.5 cubits, then 1 cubit is 20.7 inches. If 52 inches is 2.5 cubits, then 1 cubit is 20.8 inches. Now the depression into which you set the ark has to be a fraction of an inch bigger, doesn't it? You don't want to wedge the thing in there and then can't get it out again if the rock shrinks or the ark swells or something. So they put a little bit of wiggle room in there. The place in the rock must be slightly larger than the ark, so these are acceptable values. Now here's 2 Chronicles chapter 5, verses 7 to 10. The priest then brought the ark of the Lord's covenant to its place in the inner sanctuary of the temple, the most holy place, and put it beneath the wings of the cherubim. I didn't tell you about the fact that Solomon built two huge models of a cherubim, one on either side of the ark. The wings touched the wall on one side and touched the wing of the other cherubim on the other side. They were 5 cubit wings. And that one also went to the other side. So to place the ark under the wings, you see, where they joined together of the two cherubim. And that also tells you that the inner dimensions of the temple are the 20 cubits that we're talking about. They put it beneath the wings of the cherubim. The cherubim spread their wings over the place of the ark. So there was a spot there that they had prepared to put this thing. And it's carrying... Now, the cherubim spread their wings over the place of the ark and its carrying poles. These poles were so long that their ends extending from the ark could be seen from in front of the inner sanctuary, but not from outside the holy place. That tells you that the thing was oriented in the most holy place, endwise, right? So that the poles stuck out through the curtains. That's what he's telling you here. So clearly, that's what this little rectangle represents. And so the instructions back in Exodus 25 said, don't ever take the poles out of the rings. They're supposed to stay in the ark all the time. Now, they probably had taken them out when they put the ark in storage back in the time of Samuel. But nonetheless, they're supposed to be in there, but they were long. That tells you they were staying as far away from this box as they could when they carried it. They're still there today. They were still there, of course, when this was written. Okay? And there was nothing in the ark except the two tablets that Moses had placed in it at Horeb. Horeb is Mount Sinai, where the Lord made a covenant with the Israelites after they came out of Egypt. Okay, we're nearly done. Therefore, Noah's Ark constructed with a cubit of 20.6 inches. Now, Moses is not going to describe Noah's Ark in cubits and the Ark of the Covenant in cubits and have two different kinds of cubits without telling us that they're different. Don't you agree that that's the case? If he said, now we're talking about a different cubit, he would have pointed that out. 300 times 20.6 inches per cubit divided by 12 inches per foot equals, guess what, 515 feet. The boat-shaped structure is precisely the right length to be Noah's ship. Okay? So, there it is. Now, did any of you go step off 515 feet and see how big it is? That's a big boat. And you don't get a real feel for it looking down from this cliff on the side here, looking at the length of it sitting in that gully. And we're going to talk next week about what they found as they walked on it and looked at the details, and they pointed radar down inside of it, and they did magnetic metal detection systems. And so we'll see all of that next week. But I wanted to show you this boat. This is on the internet. A man in the Netherlands decided he would build an ark. And he's a construction engineer. So he set it up to build a replica of the ark. And why would he do that? Well, he wants that part on the top of it to be a restaurant. Okay. So he has an inferior motive, I guess you'd say. But anyway, he had an ulterior motive. The length of it, you see, and he's got the big door in the middle of it, and it extends down there, looks like a block. But it's a half scale. It's only 225 feet long. We're talking about an ark that's 515 feet long. Now, he built it. His name is Johann Huybers, and it's in Schagen, Netherlands. Well, can't get it to change. So there he is with his boat. You can see he built it on a barge. It doesn't have to float. And so it's sitting on a barge. That's cheating a little bit, but it gives you an idea of how big it is. And that's a picture of the guy who did it. He's got in the top of it up there, he has a restaurant. In the far end of it, down in the bowels of the ship, he has a movie theater. And he's thinking of putting in, well, he has a petting zoo and somewhere else in it. So he's going to have live animals and everything. So there it is. That's big, but you could put 8 of these inside the real ark. You realize that? It's only half scale. It's only half as long, half as wide, half as high. Think of it as twice that. I don't know if I can go back. I guess not. Yeah, there I can. Okay. Now, run this boat not where it ends there, but go all the way to that tree in the distance and make it twice that big. Okay, we're talking about a big boat. Our time's gone, and that concludes this morning's lesson. But next week, we're going to talk about the details. If you get out on this thing, now the Turkish government didn't allow them to do any digging. It needs to be excavated, but they haven't permitted that at all. But there's some non-destructive testing that we can do, and so we'll talk about that next week. Thank you very much.